This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
7:45, a quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker on this Thursday morning. Already March 6th, we kind of just flew there between the way the new year started with the terror attack on Bourbon Street, then the snowstorm, Super Bowl, and then we had Mardi Gras, and all of a sudden here we are approaching the almost the end of the first quarter of the year. Highs today, very spring-like, a nice 64-degree day waiting for you tomorrow, 75, plenty of sunshine, rain Saturday. Cloudy Sunday, but Peyton Malone from WWL Louisiana forecaster saying that the parade should get in, the truck parades that were postponed, also crew of Barkus. Then next week, nice stretch of spring weather, dry all the way through Saturday as it stands now. I was zooming through the TV, just kind of clicking around, and I stumbled upon a prayer service. I think they were saying the rosary in Latin for Pope Francis at St. Peter's. Well, let's go to Christopher White, Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. Good morning, Christopher. How are you?
Hi, Tommy. Great to be back on with you.
Thanks for taking the time. I've been there, but I'm getting my geography confused. It is St. Peter's Square, yes?
That's correct. So since the Pope entered hospital and things sort of took a turn and got more serious, for about 10 days now, there have been nightly rosary services for the Pope's health and recovery taking place in St. Peter's Square, or when it's raining inside in the Basilica. So
and you're right on Peter's St. Peter's Basilica as well, right?
Exactly.
That's what confused me.
It's been happening in both locations.
All right, let's talk about the health of the Pope. And look, for people that wrote Pope Francis off early, man, I'm going to tell you what, he is exhibiting some strength and some toughness here, huh?
He's a fighter. This is, as of today, he's been in hospital for 21 days, so three long weeks, still battling double pneumonia. The situation has had its ups and downs. He's at various points had issues of respiratory crises, respiratory failure. But each time, the doctors seem to have been able to get it under control, and he's bounced back. The doctors are saying that his prognosis is still, they're using the term guarded, meaning he's not out of danger yet, but he's also he also seems to have stabilized in recent days, so they're hopeful for his recovery.
What do we know about Pope Francis? First of all, he is how old?
He is 88 years old, and he has a number of underlying health issues. He's, over the past 3 years, really struggled with his mobility. And I apologize, I'm in St. Peter's Square right now, hence the background noise.
No, that's good. But don't apologize for anything, man. You're taking us to St. Peter's Square. That's great, Christopher.
New Orleans is probably more festive at the moment. But, he's 88 years old, struggled with mobility, and has chronic bronchitis. And so to have chronic bronchitis and then double pneumonia on top of that, it's a lot for someone his age, and that's what's made the recovery that much more challenging.
When it comes to the health of the Pope I hate to say advanced directives. I'm not saying any of that's going to be necessary at all. But when it comes to what happens if the Pope gets very sick or not, I don't know if the Pope has any family or if all of these mechanisms are already in place or documents signed or whatever. Do you know anything about that?
The Vatican is tight-lipped about this sort of thing. We know that past popes have had some of these details spelled out in writing, but they're normally not revealed until after they've passed. So with this pope, we don't know what he's decided, but presumably there is some sort of letter or documentation. He still has a sister who's alive. She's down in Argentina where he's from. But I'm sure this is something that he's thought through on his own terms. And that his doctors and closest advisors have been aware of. but we just don't know for sure. I mean, the question that's been asked multiple times since his hospitalization is, has the Pope ever been intubated? And the answer that the Vatican has maintained consistently is he has never been intubated during this hospitalization. He's had to rely on some outside oxygen supply, but he's not been intubated.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I want to talk about what's going on in the Vatican. Also, Pope Francis, if he continues to do some work from his hospital bed, what that work consists of and entails. We are live really right now in Vatican City in St. Peter's Square. Christopher White, Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. You know what surprised me, Christopher? I thought St. Peter's Square would be bigger than it was. But I guess when it's filled with people, it is. Huh? It seems bigger.
You know, the square itself can hold about 80,000 people, and then if you have people on the Via della Conciliazione, which is the big sort of iconic street that leads up to the square, then you can get somewhere between 100 and 120,000 people outside. So, a lot of times, particularly at Easter and Christmas, it gets completely filled up, and that's when you really feel, I guess, the expanse of it is when it's completely full of people.
Those that have never been need to make the trip, I'm telling you, whether you're a Roman Catholic or not, because it's just a historical area like you wouldn't believe, and to see the Sistine Chapel is amazing. More when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 7:54 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Christopher White in St. Peter's Square, Vatican City, as we talk about the health of Pope Francis. Chris, we've heard that Pope Francis has been doing some work from his hospital bed. Do you know what that work consists of or entails? I'm just curious what the Pope does on a daily basis.
Yeah, I can understand the curiosity because I share in it. We don't know a lot about what this work looks like. You know, since he's been in the hospital, we've seen him release a handful of letters. These have been letters to various conferences that he was supposed to take part in over the past few weeks, and has been unable to attend in person, so he sent letters, and these letters have been signed from the hospital. We know that he's on two occasions met with his Secretary of State, who is effectively like a prime minister of the Vatican, and then as also his chief of staff. We've seen new appointments of Catholic bishops come out while the Pope has been in the hospital, so presumably the Pope has been signing off on those sort of appointments. But I think it's fair to say this is not labor-intensive work. It is strictly reviewing paperwork for the most part.
So far, how do you think Pope Francis's papacy will be remembered or the marks that he's left? Because nothing's really changed. He's changed some outlooks on some things. He's not really changed any church policy, right?
That's right. I mean, I think it's fair to say that Pope Francis was elected in 2013 on a reform mandate. And I think a lot of the cardinals really had one idea of reform, which was to sort of clean up the Vatican to get the church's own house in order, its finances in order, it's the way it deals with clergy sex abuse. And on that front, I think it's a work in progress. The Pope has made some reforms, but the Vatican is much more transparent in its finances than it was 12 years ago, but it still has a long way to go to sort of be up to standards of what we'd expect any sort of, you know, major corporation to have. And on sex abuse, that's obviously an area where the church continues to need help in terms of transparency and accountability. But in terms of other reforms, I think that Francis has changed the way the church is perceived. It's, I think, under his papacy and under his leadership, most people say the church is viewed as a more opening, more hospitable, more welcoming place than it was 12 years ago. And so on that front, I think reform is very much underway.
If for whatever reason there should be a conclave and they have to elect a new pope, what drives what? Do we know? Does what? Are we trying to put people in the churches? Is that what drives it? Is it? Do people look at it? Because you talk about the corporate part of it, and we've been through it here in New Orleans with the archdiocese and some of the corporate maneuverings that go on with the money and trying to shield the assets and so forth. I just wonder if, how do they, or how would a College of Cardinals, although it's supposed to be, and hopefully, ultimately, as deemed by guidance from above, as they elect a new pontiff whenever that time comes, But how do they come to a one consensus on what direction the church should go in, or is that part of it, or is it all about the personality of the man that they elect?
I'd say it's a little bit of everything. I mean, there will be 100, as of today, there are 137 cardinals who would be eligible to participate in a conclave to elect the next pope. And I mean, I think, you know, fundamentally, these men have much more in common than they do apart. I mean, these are, you know, leaders of the church who, for the most part, share in the same beliefs, but probably have different areas of emphases, in the same way that the last two popes were keen to emphasize issues of marriage and family and sexuality. This pope has been much more interested in issues such as climate change and migration. So I think part of it would come down to matters of emphasis. The other is just, you know, when they get together, they will be looking at personality profiles. Who is good at governing? Who can sort of keep the house in order?
Christopher, I got to jump in for a second because we only have 30 seconds left. And I would imagine there is a vetting process at some point.
Well, they do have about 10 days of meetings behind closed doors where they discuss, frankly, the needs of this church. But we, on the outside, are not privy to that.
But they do make sure that, I would think, they check the background of anybody that would be considered, so they don't want anything coming out after somebody's elected, right?
Well, that's certainly the hope, and that's also the job of journalists, folks like me, who it's my job to, you know, figure out who the front runners are and find out everything we can about them.
I'm going to let you get back to work. Thank you, Christopher.
All right. Thank you.
You have a good day. We'll talk to you again soon. Christopher White, Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. We'll come back, talk to Walt Leger about New Orleans and Company and a new play.